Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pivotal Change. I'm your host, Ryan Kahn with CS Business Consulting, and this is a show all about leadership, the entrepreneurial mindset, people that have or want to grow their influence, and how they're going to make those one or two key changes to have the pivotal change on their path to success. We've got a very exciting episode for you tonight, and we have a very special guest that is a very dear friend of mine, Julie Smith. Julie Smith is talented in many ways. She's a serial entrepreneurship. She's an owner or partner of several companies, Harper CPA, Sulet, and now Arrive. And she is really just a driven woman that goes around the country and helps other entrepreneurs and leaders really just get their act together, drive efficiency forward, and really break through whatever ceiling it is that they're facing. So Julie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, so we always have lots of good conversations, and for the unfortunate side, the audience doesn't get to hear most of those because we do them as we travel around and do the fun things in our lives. But what you probably can share with our audience is that you are definitely a fixer. You have a keen eye and then a keen methodology for making changes and fixes and really getting things to just be better. So I want to have that conversation about when you get hired on to walk into a business. I want to know, what are some of those key indicators that you look to assess, like their people and their systems, just to see what is working effectively?
Yeah, you know, I think you go in and you just have conversations, you know, with the teammates, and I think they unveil themselves, right? You and I both know we just have to be curious. It's not us doing all the talking. Let them do all the talking. Let them unveil where those shortcomings are, and then piece together amongst the departments or amongst the people exactly what those are, and then you and I just get to bring the puzzle pieces to bring them all back together or to bridge those gaps.
Yes, I love that. And I really like to emphasize that most people go in there and they maybe have something they want to implement and they start forcing change. And you said a really, really important phrase that you go and start having conversations. You start talking to people. And, you know, you and I have similar journeys in how we arrived to where we were at. And one thing that we both hold in common is we ask a lot of questions, and we've dialed in over the years asking the right questions and asking of people what they can do better, what needs to change, and really getting to the bottom source of it. That kind of brings me to objectivity. So we often find, I'm speaking for you a little bit here, we often find that it's not necessarily the people, the staff, the teams that are the problem. It's either the leaders or the systems tend to be what I think are two of the primary culprits. So how do you get like an executive, an owner, a leader of some type to objectively identify their bottlenecks, their weak points? What's your situation dealing with that?
You know, I think you just asked the questions. I think we normally can pinpoint and go in. Like you said, we know all the answers. We've done it enough that, you know, most people aren't the exception. It's the norm, right? And just getting them to answer their own question. They know the answers. They know the answers before I go in there. It just is a matter of how long does it take for them to answer the question correctly to you or I, for us to then say, okay, now we have awareness. Now we can go somewhere with that.
Yes, I like that a lot. I really enjoy the fact that you pointed out that they probably already know the answers, even though they're calling someone like you to come in. They probably know the answers. Do you ever experience people struggling with like emotional ties to certain people, like certain types of loyalties that might cloud their judgment? What's the navigation around those?
I mean, I think that's 99% of the time, which is why you and I get called in, right? Because we have no emotional ties. And I don't know, you're going to love this, but I feel like I often get to play the bad cop. I'm never the good cop. I don't understand why. But I think when they have those emotional ties, again, it's getting them to understand that awareness around it and then really being able to drill down on tangible versus intangible. And I think you and I are aligned on that is, okay, what does this person bring tangible and what are the intangibles that we're talking about? And normally they'll full circle it before I don't have to ask any more questions, right? They understand exactly where we're going and what we're doing.
I really like how you do that. That's a well-said thing. They will come from full circle. They're going to have the light bulb moment of basically confirming what they already know from your standards. And they just need someone like us who, I thought for a second you're going to say we don't have emotions. And I was like, man, that's scary if we're really that close. But no, we don't have the emotional ties.
I've been told that though. So don't.
We've all been accused of it at some point. But that's also makes us good is we're not just looking at like going in there and crushing people's lives and the way that they make a living for their family. We're looking at effectiveness, the overall picture. And ultimately, there's a method called the Rogerian. method, which is you're going to ask questions until they discover the answer themselves. And I've watched you do it, which is you're artful, scientific and artful. It's a wonderful, delicate balance. So in doing that, you've now discovered the answers with a lot of these people that you're working with. And now it comes to the accountability side of it. Okay, we know the answers, we know the changes, we know kind of the kinks in the machine. What type of feedback do you get when it comes to the accountability time? Like whether you're revealing a system is truly not functional or some person is just kind of getting by with their workload, where does the accountability come in? What are those measures?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you're doing and what you're, you know, moving the neck on. But I think if you're meeting with the leadership, the executive team, I always like to go and say, okay, we have discovered what the issue is. Let's start with the end in sight and work our way backwards, right? And so if we know this is the goal, every decision we make therein is around this goal, and we won't falter. We will keep that we may swerve a little, but we're going to keep that straight line to that goal. And then I think you just figure out who is doing what and where does that align with the people that you have in the seats currently. And oftentimes, like you said, it's not necessarily the people, but I think at that point you have to start asking the question of, do we have the right people in the right seats doing the right things for that goal? We always want to set people up for success, not failure. And I think oftentimes that kind of gets lost because the leaders, the executive team, we've got to get here. And we don't necessarily leave time to evaluate, do we have the right people in the right seats doing all the right things?
I love that. So I'm gonna break this down a little bit and unpack it. So first of all, you and I are basically twins. I swear.
I don't have facial hair, though. It's interesting.
Yeah. You're definitely the smarter, better looking twin. But the big thing for me is that the working backwards, people don't think that. They're like, where do I start? Well, you start at the finish line and you build yourself backwards until you get to the point of like, do we have all the people on the bus that we need? And then just like you said, are these people even in the right seats? And if you build backwards, you may realize that like, I need two more of these people and I don't have them, right? And then you get along with the accountability side. I'm thinking that I'm hearing, if I'm going to paraphrase it and phrase it in Ryan's speech, that you get people into a role with clarified roles, responsibilities, so that you're setting them up for success. And that failure is one of two options. Failure is they choose failure. They're just not going to perform. And they have chosen not to utilize the resources, the training, the diligence and self-discipline that's been provided, or they're just truly incapable. And I think that one's fairly rare. I think most people choose failure and you got to root that out. And that becomes a cultural issue. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a fair step. And to take that a step further, if someone's truly incapable, I think that goes back to leadership because we did not evaluate that person effectively to put them in the right seat. So we need to do a better job and have awareness around that.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, back in the law enforcement realm, I was police training officer, PTO, and I became a police training supervisor of the whole program. And I told people when they would come to me, oh, this guy's not going to make it. He's not getting it. He's not doing this. I said, their ability to succeed is a direct reflection on your ability to be a leader, teacher, mentor, trainer. And boom, that was a light bulb moment. So just like you said, it reflects on the leadership. Did you choose the right people? Did you mentor them correctly? Did you put all the effort necessary to make them successful? And if not, who's that really a reflection on? So I love that. Well, let's talk about balance. Last question before the break, because we always got to take those commercial timeouts. So you get in there and you're recommending the leaders to start answering their own questions and taking action on it. So when we take action, we have to base those decisions on both data-driven hard numbers, metrics, key indicators, whatever it may be, and also human insights and some of those softer skill sets. Where do you kind of help people find their balance with the hard data versus the softer touch, softer skills?
You know, I think the human insight backs up the data. And I think if you ask them to kind of point in that direction, you'll find the balance, right? So there's like, I feel that this is happening. And you're like, okay, well, how do we make that a fact? Or how do we, you know, balance that out with something else that we can, you know, answer that why question very black and white instead of I feel. And I think oftentimes the way they're feeling is exactly what the data is going to provide to us in one way or another. And I really like to make decisions based on that because you get the balance of the feels, but it's normal. I actually don't know that I've ever run into a situation where the I feel being honest and truthful doesn't back up the data behind that.
Yeah, I would say, especially if you can really tap into the core. I've probably run into that maybe once or twice in my entire life where it's like this person has some value that there is no metric or credit for. And one of them was actually in our firm. We had a young guy, he was doing well. he was doing well, but not quite as well as the time and grade should do it. But we found out that when we were making our big transition over the advisory system, there's pockets of friction everywhere, right? With new clients coming on board, us figuring our system out, transitioning old clients. And what we realized is this guy was over here and he just had that way with people where he was saving relationships and de-escalating friction and doing all this stuff. And that wasn't getting documented. He wasn't getting credit for that anywhere else. So we're kind of over here on the data being like, man, you're supposed to get 20 tax returns done this week and you only did 14. What's up? We spent an extra 6 hours on phone calls saving our clients, you know, and so that's a unicorn, right? That's one time where the feel doesn't match the data. And so I really like you pointing out the fact that that's a unicorn situation. What you're going to find out when you dig enough and you're truthful with yourself is just like what you said, the two are going to fall into alignment.
But I do think, Ryan, to your point, you were curious enough to ask the question, to dig deeper. And honestly, had that data been kept, you would have been able to back that up with that data. And so I mean, full circle, that you asked the right questions to get the answer. And I bet from now on, he's tracking his time when he's doing those phone calls to save those clients, right?
Touche, he is. Yeah, and there's making special notes. That's perfect. Well, this is a great spot for us to put a pin in the conversation. We're gonna be right back with more Julie Smith and more pivotal change. So sit tight. Right after these messages, we'll have more. Welcome back to Pivotal Change. Now, I know you love what you're watching, and the great news is you don't ever have to miss a moment. Pivotal Change is now on demand, just like any and all of your favorite shows on the Now Media TV network. You can find us anytime, anywhere, stream at your own convenience. And even if you can't jump on to watch a show, it's now all in podcast format. You can find us on the website, nowmedia.tv, on Roku or iOS. You can get instant access for this bilingual programming anywhere. So we're going to continue going on with this wonderful show that you love. Hopefully you've been listening with a pen and paper. I forgot to mention that in the beginning, but take notes because there's some serious wisdom from our guest, Julie Smith. So Julie, we're back and we're going to keep this conversation rolling.
Let's do it.
All right. So we're talking about making change, being honest with yourself and the questions and coming full circle on how to match up a balance with, you know, performance and maybe some of those soft skills. And you made some really good exiting points about like how asking the right questions, digging deeper, and then making the adjustments for it. So we're talking about change and implementing change and having people really examine themselves. So now there's the identification process is complete. We've got it. We need to fix these things. These were the kinks or the bottlenecks. What's the first step that you ensure implementation doesn't stall out?
That's accountability, right? And I think that's probably what we both do is hold people's feet to the fire. If you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it. And if you don't, I would hate to have to step in and do that for you.
I love it. So don't put me in a position where I have to come save you, right? And to caveat that, you have no problem, especially if something's new, people asking for help, people recruiting teammates, trying to get more resources. But if they just simply underperform, mm-hmm. That's where we've got to hold some accountability.
Well, and I don't think it's, you know, I just think people navigating, they just have to, again, it's all about awareness. You're going in and when you make these changes, you're making a cultural shift normally inside the firm. And so sometimes to start out, you kind of stall, right? Because everybody kind of freezes. And I think it's creating that environment that it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to tap in a teammate to come in and do something or have the honest conversation. What I thought was your strength, maybe I misread that and it just simply is not. But again, I think that respect around just having that honest conversation, it will allow us to take 10 steps forward instead of 8 steps backwards most of the time.
Yes, I love that. You know, humans are going to naturally resist change. It's crazy because the only thing that's consistent in life is change, as the little idiom states. So we resist something we know is coming all the time. and we got to work through those hurdles. And like you just touched on, that is a cultural shift, right? Even if it's just an operating system, you're just going from software A to software B. There's going to be a change in culture on some level to that. So I really appreciate you emphasizing those honest conversations. Hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling about this? Do you feel like you're keeping up? Are you performing as you originally expected, as we expected? And people are, they're going to open up. So
in Ryan, building, can I interrupt you for a second?
Because
I think there's something, you know, I to go with that is, I think we need to come from a place of empathy, right?
Yes.
And I think it's asking, what else can I do to support you during this change? I understand it's, you know, whatever emotions you're going through. How can I best support you so we can get from point A to point B? And I think, you know, I don't know about you, but I think most of the times people are like, no, I got it. Like, if you believe in them and you're willing to support them through what they may believe to be a tough time, you know, it's change. They will run through the wall for you. Yes. And I think just providing that space and empathy for them to understand that we understand that it's hard. We may make it look so easy, but we understand and we're with them every step of the way. I think what you get out of that is far better than, you know, coming in with the iron fist per se.
I totally agree. Very rare should you ever come down with an iron fist, if ever. I haven't had to use it yet. I mean, I guess in law enforcement, but that's like physical violence, you know, and that just doesn't apply to like 99.99% of the population. So I really like those final touches. That was an excellent interruption. You can interrupt me anytime. So building that consistency and the accountability into operations, right? So the improvements can really last. So instead of just upfront implementation accountability, we need to build in longevity accountability. Can you just maybe give an example or tell a story about how that played out in some of your experiences?
I think you have to empower your team. I don't think it's up to me to hold everybody accountable, right? I think you empower your team, whether that's empowering them to write the new system and process, you know, the written portion of it, whether that's empowering a team member to provide additional training on something to the entire team. And, you know, with that, I don't know, I think one of the most rewarding things we can do is to watch that transpire, empower someone to stand up in front of their peers and provide value. We have just made them now, they're the people, they're the ones that everybody's going to go to when they have a question. We've taken ourselves out of it. We've maybe taken Yes. the leadership team out of it. So I think that accountability kind of has to switch, and you kind of have to be able to empower everybody on the team to own a portion of that. Because as we all know, we're only as good as our weakest link or, you know, team member. So if you get everybody holding everybody else accountable to do their part for whatever that bigger goal is, I think you're going to see that accountability and kind of be able to take the leadership team and, you know, us as consultants ultimately out of it at the end.
Nope, I love that so much. Empowering the individual in connection with empowering the team ultimately empowers the firm or the company. And letting each other, like, we have shared rewards, we had shared shortcomings, shared sufferings when it's crunch time, and that all builds camaraderie and does, just like you said, it helps people work to achieve that little bit of extra. And if I have the permission, as you know, the low man in the field, to be like, hey, I think we need to be doing this better. Why are we not getting this done? They're going to get upset, or we're not going to meet the goals, and we're going to hold up our buddies because they're relying on our quality product, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a super powerful thing to be in the position to do. So that sounds like you're starting to develop some habits. You're starting to develop some routines. Like, I don't know, do you have like regular meetings? Do you have regular certain, like, you know, little huddles and things like that? What do you do to help create a company culture where those habits and those routines flourish?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what is the size of the firm, what, you know, how segregated are they out, and what does that look like? Bar none, you've got to have a team meeting at least once a week, whether that's within your own department or whether you're small enough that includes the entire organization. And it's just, you know, I think you've got to have some sort of agenda. You got to follow some sort of cadence of exactly what that looks like. Everyone knows what to expect. It's got to be productive too. Nobody likes to come to a meeting that you walk out with nothing. So whether that be, what is the goal for the week, and break it down by each individual, or you're talking, you know, with just your team, you know, holistically about what is everybody's goal? What is our team going to achieve this week? I also like, you know, it's like, what did we achieve last week too? Did we reach our goal? Okay, now let's move on. let's look through the windshield. What are we going to do this week? And let's get everybody on board so everybody can understand, especially if you're in an industry where there's crunch times, deadlines. I think it's really important to be transparent and be able to communicate that.
Yep, I can't agree with you more. I think you need a formal communication once a week. And then if you're in a crunch time, so we do ours, we do one staff meeting a week. Then the teams will work with each other. They'll get these little micro meetings, these 15, 20-minute meetings
Huddle.
with these huddles. They'll reorganize. And then we do a staff meeting every week, plus an executive team meeting every week. So those are scheduled for 2 hours. Very rarely do they take the full 2 hours. But I think it's a really important thing that you just said. And on top of that, the people are going to be empowered in that meeting to make change, to raise their hand, to offer suggestions, and again, to realign goals. Hey, maybe we're ahead of schedule. Let's keep knocking it down. And then during our busy season, we up it to twice a week. So everybody is constantly updated. We know if somebody's fallen behind, it's actually a team problem. Let's go help them. Maybe they got too much on their plate, or they got something overly complex in this moment that they can't get to the little stuff. So that adaptation is wonderful, and that camaraderie is wonderful. We got about 30 seconds left for any final thoughts. What's a piece of wisdom you can drop on us for people that are looking to make change?
I think when people make change, it's the fear of failure. And I don't think that exists in today's world with the right mindset. I don't think there's failure. I think you pivot, I think you learn, and you have awareness. And you don't fail unless you quit. So don't quit.
I love that. Don't quit. Be ready to pivot. Love it. Name of the show. Something that you definitely believe in. So, Julie, this has been absolutely fantastic. If people wanted to get a hold of you, if they wanted to find you, use your services, pick your brain a little bit, how do we get a hold of Julie Smith?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Julie Smith. You can find me at Arrive Accountants. You can find me at Harper CPA Plus. You can, if you Google me, there's probably pretty any business you can find me under, I guess.
Outstanding. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been truly a pleasure. I look forward to linking up with you again soon. And for everyone else, I want you to sit tight because we're only halfway done with this episode of Pivotal Change. We'll be right back after these messages. You have successfully reached the halfway point on tonight's episode of Pivotal Change, and we had a wonderful conversation with Julie Smith. She is really on top of how to implement change, keep it going through accountability, and ultimately have everyone empowered for success. So I hope you took good notes. I hope you remember the very clever and insightful things she said. And now we're going to move on to another similar topic about running things well. And I have a very special guest with me tonight. I have Natalie Kahn. Now, Natalie is a very special type of entrepreneur because she does some of the busiest jobs in the world. She is a full-time woman that runs a house. She is the woman of the house, and she runs a very busy home, has a couple of employees, and has children that does everything. On top of that, she runs her own business. She does Pomeranian breeding with purebred. She runs, does 40s fashionable fit and fabulous. And she helps teach and impart elegance and fashion and self-confidence into an elite network of women. So Natalie, welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
So one of the things that's going to be really fun about this conversation is we're going to take everyone's mindset on just a slight switch on how they probably regularly think of themselves. It's very common in the Western world to say that you have your business life and you have your personal life, your family life, but you have kind of cracked a little bit of a code with some of the circles that you run in that most of the highly successful families don't just run their family life separately. They run their family a little bit more like a business. And then they also have their businesses kind of in harmony with their personal lives. So can you tell me a little bit about what you have found and what you believe truly successful and wealthy households do that is apart and different from the others?
Yes, I like to think of each family and business as a kingdom. They work together. You don't really separate them. They're all part of the same kingdom. And you have the family unit and the business working together to help build up the kingdom, because you're either building or taking away with every decision you make.
Ooh, okay, I like that. So every decision is important. Sometimes we go through life, we think, oh, this may not have much consequence, but could there be a ripple effect or a domino effect on every decision, big or small?
Definitely. Since you're the main breadwinner of the house, in our situation, if you come home and are stressed by the little things going on at the house, that's going to affect how you are able to work, when you leave. And that's part of it.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're looking at creating an environment to where everyone is supported, vision is supported, mission is supported, and people have similar but different roles.
Correct.
Okay, so the kingdom, that's a really good way to think about it. So everybody's going to have some type of role. They're supporting some type of bigger cause than themselves. And you had mentioned in this situation that if I'm going out and driving the primary production for the family, that other people are going to help support that. So, could everyone's decision also, in talking about your decision-making process, have decisions big or small, the ones that seem small, have a ripple effect or a domino effect? Like, oh, this isn't really of any consequence. So, boom, but ultimately shows up sometimes later. Every decision, big or small, has importance. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Have you ever heard the phrase, don't sweat the small stuff, everything's small stuff? Throw that out the window. Even the small stuff matters. The small stuff is adds to your kingdom or takes away and is very important to keep in mind.
Gotcha. So I'm just throwing out things like don't sweat the small stuff. Like, oh, your kid posted something online. Oh, your kid had a minor behavioral thing at school. All of those things can really not be so much small stuff, but add up, damage reputation, damage ultimately the projection in the future of not just the individual family member, but the family as a whole.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's a good way to think about it. Throw out the don't sweat the small stuff. Now, we don't want to drive anxiety into everybody's lives, but every decision needs to be made with importance. So how do you and articulate how we work together to like protect our boundaries? Every family has their boundaries, their culture, their expectations. But what do you do? What do we do that helps keeps our family's priorities first?
Calendar is paramount. You sticking with the calendar, sticking with what you're planning on doing. It doesn't matter how you feel that day. What matters is that you are disciplined enough to get it done and to meet the requirements of the day. We also really focus on who we surround ourselves with. We don't like negative influences in our life or people that are going to drag us down. It's very important to surround yourself with like-minded people or people that think even better than you is even better. And people that will bring you up, not bring you down. So that you can focus on your mission, which for us is always faith first, and then after faith comes family and relationships and things of that nature.
I love it. So, kind of working some of those backwards, knowing what your boundaries need to be. Like, if you have a boundary of faith, you want to have a boundary of anything that takes away from faithfulness. If you want to prioritize family, you want to take away anything that jeopardizes your family. And I really like the surrounding yourself with people that are just, like-minded or better than you. There's a fun little saying that says, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You need to be in a room where you can
Exactly.
learn and grow with other people. And then another really good point, I think a lot of families, especially those people that are business owners, entrepreneurs, they want to grow their influence. Things that they need to hear is it doesn't matter how you feel. And I believe you said you need to rise up and meet the requirements of the day. Is that what you said?
Be
I love
disciplined
that.
enough to rise up.
Oh, I love it. Be disciplined enough to rise up. That's really, really fantastic stuff. So, kind of carrying on with that, how do you approach building and maintaining that high quality inner circle? That must be a difficult portion. And then, what happens when somebody ultimately has maybe been brought into the circle or close to it and does not line up with the values?
Yes, so we sit down together, you and I, fairly often and kind of review the people in our lives and the people in our kids' lives, see what type of people they are, if they're bringing us up or bringing us down, and then we have to make a decision whether to keep those people within our family unit, as relationships or not. And it sounds harsh, but it's just some part of the kingdom that has to be done. You can't have people that are bringing you down. And so we just kind of slowly pull away from those people that are bringing us down and focus our efforts on finding new people that meet our requirements.
I like that a lot. The constant analysis and review of the relationships and the friendships. So that gets a little bit more into running the family like a business, because as a business owner, I'm constantly evaluating our client base, our third-party relationships, our vendors, who are we going to be doing business with and attaching ourselves to. And if I have a business person that I'm attached to, and then they get into some really funky trouble, right? Well, then that could possibly tarnish my name or drag me down or make me start to think and act like them. The other thing is, again, the whole kingdom mindset. I really think is interesting that you brought that up today. Think back to the old feudal systems. We have the Stonewall Castle, right? And the kingdom is run from inside that castle, even though it obviously stretches out into the mountains, hills, and valleys around it. But if you have people with known diseases and there's a cure for that disease, but they refuse to treat that disease, are you going to allow that person to come into your castle and spread that disease and infect everyone inside? Well, that's a metaphor for people with toxic behaviors, improper mindset, things that, bad speech, rumors. And like you said, people that don't lift you up, the candle blower outers is kind of the non-proper grammatic phrase that we like to use, that if they're every time you have a celebration, something good going on in your life, you're in a good mood, they blow out your candle and they complain about your success, or they one-up you, or they backbite you and say, well, you're still not good enough. And you shouldn't come away thinking they're your best friend, because maybe there's some fun there, but they've blown out your candle at the end of the day. Those are people that need to be called as well. And that's something that you pointed out. And then, of course, getting your children on board with something just like that. So, how do you approach frictions and challenges that arise?
Just you approach them head on. If you are not experiencing friction, you're probably not growing. So we view friction as a positive thing in our life. It means you're growing.
I love it. So friction is going to be a positive thing. There's growing pains. So friction starts fires. Friction holds things in place when there's turbulence. So friction isn't always bad. And even the negative side of friction, you need it to maybe identify it and use it as a growing opportunity.
And also, you can use it to knit your family and friends together closer as you come together to solve a problem. I think that's really good and important to remember is it's a growth opportunity and a learning opportunity for your kids, for each other, for your relationships.
Gotcha. And so, kind of spinning a little bit off that, talking, the business minded, if you're raising your kids to say, hey, we need to run this family a little bit more like a business, and we need to protect the brand or make sure that everyone's growing and developing and being a better employee over time, a better contributor, a better supporter, a better family member. What's the struggle with the kids and their mindset saying, well, I really like this friend, like I've just known him forever. But that friend has gone from sweet little innocent elementary school kid to now toxic high schooler. How hard is it to condition your kids that this is a little more like a business decision on whether to keep that friendship or not?
It's difficult. It really is. Teenagers, their mind's not fully developed. They don't understand everything the way that you and I understand things. But I think just being open and honest with them about the goals of the family, the goals of the business, how you're trying to protect them and protect their mental health and their emotional health and their physical health and all those aspects of life, and your faith, obviously. I think it's just really important to tell them that and be open about it. And then they can see and kind of come to the conclusion themselves, point out some things and let them draw the conclusions and just lead them down the path that shows them. And I mean, if push comes to shove and you have to, you do what you have to do to get that person out of your life. You can always take away your kids' car keys and phones and just keep them from being around those influences. But hopefully, you can guide them in a less severe way.
Yeah, I like how you said lead and guide, and then you also separated that from push come to shove, because those are different things. I think too many times parents think that parenting is all pushing and shoving, and then on the other side it's all kitty gloves, but there's this happy medium. And you really emphasized regular, consistent, open communication, and then something that I love so much and actually just came up in the last segment as well, which is asking your kids the question and pointing out the situations and the scenarios and leading them to draw the conclusion that, ooh, that's putting me in a tight spot. That's putting us in a tight spot. And that's not the outcome that we're looking for. And so they come to that Rogerian method of being asked the right questions and drawing their own conclusions. This has been really fun so far, and we're going to keep going with it. But right now, we're going to stick a pin in this conversation, and we're going to come back with maybe some practical applications and things like that. So we're going to be back with more Natalie Kahn right after this. And everyone else, sit tight. There'll be a little bit more pivotal change on our final segment of the night. We are back for our final push of the night, the ending segment of the show, and I really hope that you're enjoying what you're watching. If you're really liking this, guess what? You don't have to stop here. You can go download additional episodes. You can stream this show and many others live on the Now Media TV website. One of the wonderful parts is that we are now live or on demand. So you can go to nowmedia.tv. You can go onto your Roku or Apple device, your iOS system software, and download anything. And they are full bilingual programming, an entire lineup in English and Spanish. So also, if you prefer to listen on the go, the cool part is we are now in podcast format. Once again, go to the website, download the podcast. So if you've got a road trip, an airplane, something where you just can't sit there and watch, you can still listen and get all of your current news, relative cultural updates, business insights, and leadership tips like this show, Pivotal Change. Now we're having a conversation with Natalie Kahn that's ongoing. It's about the philosophy and the mindset change of trying to be a higher, more elite family and running with a new mindset, which is a little more similar to a business, or as Natalie eloquently put, it's like running a kingdom and how you have to manage and protect the kingdom. So Natalie, let's keep this conversation going and let's maybe switch to a little bit of a practical side here. So you are clearly doing this day in, day out. I try to thank you enough, but it's oftentimes a thankless endeavor that you do. But what systems, what habits have you put in place or have you built that help you plan and then manage all of these calendars, the schedules, the family priorities, activities, et cetera?
Well, first we have to know what our family mission is, the basis for our family, where we're headed, and how we want to do that. So we sit down together and plan that out. And then from there, we have our priorities. Our foundation being faith, and then family and relationships and hard work. And we just implement those every day. Usually we use a calendar, stick to the calendar religiously, so to speak, so that we know where we're going and follow through.
I also know that when we have these family meetings that we do, usually once a week suffices, we do that around a meal, or maybe we'll do it like on a Sunday right before we kick off the school week. A couple of things that we do is we have these group chats set up, and you'll send out the group chats, just a reminder, tomorrow we have this. And also in the week, you'll sit here and say, hey, we've got these two, three events coming up, and we'll let people know. We're going to try to go to this one, but this one is optional. We may back out if it fits, so people know what's a hard, fast, hey, we got to be there, we got to keep a commitment, versus what's a little gray, and like, if we need to, we can skip this one. And so I appreciate you going through and identifying those things as well. What about like recruiting help? What type of help have you recruited in your daily life?
Well, we have a housekeeper that helps clean the house and take care of laundry and stuff of that nature. But I have to, again, have to be on top of that and tell her what needs to be done, and make sure the kids know to clean up and pick up before she gets here and have their laundry ready and stuff. We also have a family assistant, which helps us a lot. She runs a lot of errands so that I can do the bigger things. She does a lot of the smaller tasks. But again, I have to sit down every morning and come up with a list for her so that she knows, and just kind of keep everybody on track.
So I like that. So you've implemented outside people into that family circle, and you're coordinating them as well. I know at times there's been family members that have been in multiple different states. We had people at home in Kentucky, down in Tennessee, in Colorado, in North Dakota, all at the same time. So incorporating helpers and commissioning those roles and responsibilities, having the clear roles and responsibilities of who does what on a regular basis, but even more importantly, in those adaptation moments when you travel or get into something new. So that's very good that you've done that for us. What about like, setting expectations and goals and what people should be doing at different times or seasons in their life. What are the clear and consistent ways? What do you have for the family? What are the clear and consistent ways that you deliver that to the family?
Again, it's about priorities. Ours is faith first, and then after that, we as a family, we do our faith activities together. But after that, we do exercise, we do self-care and education and things of that nature, just to better ourselves and to stay on track so that we can keep the mission.
Gotcha. So the expectations of every family member is to be sharpening your faith, maintaining or improving your health, getting an education or a skill, and then working all of those things in tandem with, again, making sure that the foundation stays into some faith ultimately, and then supporting the family together. So some of the expectations I know that we do is like, hey, on this certain trip, you're in charge of this. Right? Or hey, you guys are responsible to do that, and everyone's handed off a little bit of responsibility. I think one of the fun ones that you like to do is you kind of switch between the two boys. Is if I'm out of town, you'll say, "Hey, I need one of you to be on security tonight. Go do your dad's job and go walk around the house and lock up, make sure all the windows are closed out, everything's locked down for the night." And that invokes a little bit of that manly, that masculine role out of those guys to be the protector of the house. And then on the feminine side, you'll take the girls and say, "Hey, maybe the personal assistant's out of town. Hey, I'm gonna need somebody to help keep notes. Hey, I'm gonna need somebody to help remind me of this." And you empower those children to do that next step. So that's a really fun expectation that you put in place where everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing at those times. Let's specifically turn to travel now and some of these experiences. So you're going out and you're putting the kids in the world pretty frequently, at a higher frequency than I would say most families, and you're not just vacationing all the time. Kids are not just beach bums wherever they go. So what are you doing to enrich travel experiences for like culture, relationships, education? How do you execute that?
First of all, just the educational aspect of where we visit. There's always, monuments, museums, things of that nature. In addition to that, we visit churches wherever we go to keep our faith going and keep us grounded. And one thing that we do that I really enjoy is we try to do a service project every time we go out of town, whether it's feeding the homeless or going to a homeless shelter or anything like that that just helps other people. We do that, and that educates them a lot. Also, giving them the opportunity to speak with people from all walks of life and people of all different ages, really enhances their ability to communicate.
I love that. So we are not, so here's one of the defects. There's great and good and bad to education system. One of the defects in the education system is everybody only talks to people exactly their age. And so we try to heavily promote when you go to one of these events with, dad and there's a big conference, you're going to talk to these old people and these business owners, and you're going to develop, and you're going to be able to articulate and work your way through a conversation with somebody generations apart, potentially. And then I really like the monument emphasis. There's always a museum, a zoo, aquarium, something of that nature. And by golly, we're going to find it and go to it, right? And even if I have to speak that day and the family runs to it, I get to come back over dinner and say, "Tell me all about the museum. What was your favorite animal at the zoo or aquarium?" And then I get the education knowing that my kids will concretely learn something from you. And that higher level of exposure means that your kingdom is now more educated, more capable, and ready to connect than just sitting around with your peers all day. So, yeah, great kudos to you for executing all of that. So, let's talk about like friendships and relationships, right? There's a process, and we kind of hinted to this in the segment that we started off in, but there's a process in identifying friendships, relationships, or deeper connections that support our family vision. How do you talk through that? What are some of the actual content points that come up in those conversations?
First, does the friend meet our family priorities of putting faith first and friends and family and health and well-being? Do they promote those things or do they rebel against it and want to do the opposite? That's kind of the first basic thing to do is to see for them. And then after that, just being consistent and who we choose and consistently reevaluating them and making sure that they are in alignment with our family goals.
Great. So you get to discover if they're in alignment because when the new friend comes over, they receive the household rules upon their first visit. And they get sat down for a little 30 to 60 second speech about here's the Khan family household rules. And that is delivered to them expectations literally from the first moment they walk in our house. And then they're expected to enforce those, help police those throughout the rest of their stay. And then you get to know the kids really well. You get involved in their lives a little bit and ask them about their day at school and what was the funny thing that happened at the movie theater the other night. And you learn their stories and a little bit of their inside jokes. So now that you're connecting with this kid, you can start to see the yellow, orange, and red flags appear a lot more. So I noticed that establishing a caring relationship with these kids seems to be pretty important to you as well.
Exactly. It is. Being around, just being present in the room or in the kitchen. Our kids like to hang out in the kitchen. They're always eating because they're all teenagers. And just being present and interacting with them, you can tell a lot about them.
Gotcha. And then you start to learn a little bit of, as the kids say, you know, the tea, a little spill in the tea around the school. And you know that if, hey, we're associated with this kid over here and he just got suspended for the second time the school year and he did what? He got caught with alcohol, got an alcohol citation at 17 years old. We can pretty quickly discover this kid doesn't need to be coming around hanging out in our house, right?
Exactly.
We can call the herd from there. So we're getting ready to close out the show. This has been pretty fantastic. You've given a lot of really good insights. I always encourage the audience to watch with a pen and paper, and hopefully they're taking kingdom notes right now about how to run their family like a kingdom or a business. Let me just hear one non-negotiable rule or one non-negotiable practice that's in your household to help keep it thriving.
One non-negotiable would be church attendance. That is the foundation of our entire kingdom. So church attendance is non-negotiable.
Gotcha. So you have to at least be consistent in practicing your faith.
Yes.
Right. And hopefully just the attendance, you don't just want to be a ticket puncher, right? Just go warm a pew. But you want to be praying, reading, developing yourself daily. But the basic level is get around the other people of your faith and grow together. So I like that a lot. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. That really opens, hopefully, the minds of people on how they should be thinking about themselves.
Thank you.
And everyone else, well, I want to take this chance to emphasize to you that from the beginning of this episode, you can identify change. You can ask yourself the right questions. You got to be honest with yourself to find that change and that growth. And you got to start thinking about life on the second half of this episode in a different light. You need to really expand your horizons, but on the same token, strictly adhere to what the core of your family is and how you're going to grow together like a kingdom that is expanding or like a business that is growing. So get out there into the world and see the change and be the change. And we'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.